Here's what nobody's telling you about BlackRock's billion-dollar Bitcoin bet. While everyone's celebrating the record inflows into their new Bitcoin ETF, the actual price of Bitcoin dropped 5% in the days immediately following the launch. Think about that for a moment. The world's largest asset manager creates what should be the ultimate legitimization vehicle for digital assets. Money pours in faster than anyone predicted, and the underlying asset falls. Meanwhile, Ethereum and Litecoin are quietly rallying. So what's really happening here? Is this the institutional adoption story everyone's been waiting for? Or are we watching something far more complex and potentially dangerous unfold in real time? Welcome back to Edge Capital Insights. I'm Sloan. Today we're going deep on BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF and the fracture lines it's creating across financial markets. This matters right now because we're witnessing what might be the most significant structural shift in crypto markets since Bitcoin's creation. Or we're watching a masterclass in how traditional finance can absorb and neutralize disruptive technologies. Let's establish the landscape, because the story everyone thinks they know isn't the full picture. Before January, the Bitcoin ETF conversation was dominated by rejections. The SEC had been the financial equivalent of Lucy pulling away the football for over a decade. Grayscale was locked in legal combat. Traditional asset managers were making cautious noises about maybe someday, possibly, considering crypto exposure for their most sophisticated clients. Then BlackRock filed their application for IBIT, not some crypto-native firm, not a fintech startup trying to make a name. BlackRock, the company that manages $10 trillion in assets, the firm that's essentially the shadow central bank of the global financial system. When Larry Fink speaks, markets listen. When BlackRock moves, the entire investment universe pays attention. The filing itself was surgical. Where previous applications had been met with dozens of regulatory questions, BlackRock's structure anticipated most concerns. They partnered with Coinbase for custody, a choice that immediately signaled they understood the regulatory game. They designed the fund with authorized participants who could create and redeem shares, providing the arbitrage mechanism that keeps ETF prices in line with underlying assets. But here's where it gets interesting. The week before IBIT launched, institutional sentiment surveys were showing mixed results at best. Fidelity's digital assets division reported that only 37% of institutional investors were planning to increase crypto allocations in the coming year. Bank of America's fund manager survey showed crypto ranking dead last among asset classes for expected performance. Yet when IBIT went live, something unprecedented happened. $1.2 billion flowed in during the first week. Not the first month, the first seven trading days. To put that in perspective, the average ETF takes 18 months to reach $1 billion in assets. Most never reach that milestone at all. Rachel Aguirre from BlackRock's ETF division told CNBC they were seeing interest from institutional investors who had been waiting for a compliant and transparent way to access Bitcoin markets. But the data tells a more nuanced story. Analysis of the order flow suggests that while institutional money was certainly a significant portion of early inflows came from existing crypto holders rotating out of direct Bitcoin positions and into the ETF structure. This rotation pattern explains our opening paradox. Bitcoin's price declined not because demand weakened, but because the market structure fundamentally shifted. Holders who had been storing Bitcoin on exchanges or in cold wallets were selling those positions to buy IBIT shares instead. Same economic exposure, different wrapper, but in the process, they created selling pressure on Bitcoin itself, while simultaneously driving inflows to the ETF. The numbers are staggering when you step back. IBIT's assets under management hit $5 billion by the end of its second week. Daily trading volume averaged $10 million, making it one of the most actively traded new ETFs in history. But perhaps most telling is what happened to the broader crypto ETF application pipeline. Within days of IBIT's launch, the SEC received 12 additional Bitcoin ETF applications. Fidelity, Invesco, VanEck, Grayscale, with their conversion application, everyone who had been sitting on the sidelines suddenly realized the window was open. The regulatory precedent had been set. Gary Gensler's statement about working to ensure investors have access to robust and reliable information about these products wasn't just bureaucratic speak. It was a signal that the SEC's posture had fundamentally shifted. They weren't going to approve every application that landed on their desk, but they were no longer operating from a position of blanket skepticism. The custody arrangements alone represent a sea change. BlackRock's partnership with Coinbase for custody services brought institutional-grade safekeeping to a market that had been plagued by exchange failures and security breaches. When you're managing retirement funds and pension assets, custody isn't a detail. It's everything. The fact that Coinbase's custody division was already holding over $100 billion in client assets made the partnership logical, but it also created a concentration risk that nobody wants to discuss publicly. Consider the ecosystem effects. Coinbase's stock price jumped 12% the day IBIT launched, despite the company having no direct equity stake in the ETF's success. The market was pricing in the value of being BlackRock's custody partner, the increased trading volumes, and the potential for additional mandates from other asset managers launching competing products. But there's another layer to the story that most analysis misses. The traditional finance establishment didn't just create a Bitcoin ETF. They created a Bitcoin ETF that's more liquid, more transparent, and more accessible than Bitcoin itself for most institutional investors. Think about the implications. If you're a pension fund or insurance company, buying Bitcoin directly means dealing with wallet security, key management, regulatory uncertainty around direct holdings, and explaining to compliance departments why you're dealing with crypto exchanges. IBIT eliminates all of that friction. It trades on NASDAQ. It's regulated as a securities product. It provides the same economic exposure with none of the operational complexity. From an institutional perspective, it's not just an improvement over direct Bitcoin ownership, it's a wholesale replacement. This brings us to the analytical core of what's really happening here and why the bull and bear cases are both more extreme than anyone's admitting publicly. Let's start with the bull case because it's more compelling than crypto skeptics want to acknowledge. The institutional adoption thesis isn't just about pension funds and insurance companies finally getting comfortable with Bitcoin. It's about the financialization of an entire asset class. Tom Jessup from Fidelity Digital Assets called IBIT's launch a major milestone and predicted more institutional investors would enter the market in the coming months. That prediction is already proving conservative. JP Morgan's analysis suggests we could see $10 billion in inflows to Bitcoin ETFs over the next 12 months. But even that number understates the potential magnitude. Here's the math that should terrify Bitcoin maximalists and excite traditional fund managers. Bitcoin's total market capitalization sits around $1.2 trillion. That sounds massive until you compare it to other asset classes. The U.S. stock market is worth approximately $50 trillion. Global fixed income markets are worth over $120 trillion. Real estate is worth even more than that if Bitcoin achieves even a 2% allocation in traditional portfolios that represents over $3 trillion in potential demand. Current Bitcoin supply is capped at 21 million coins, with approximately 19.5 million already mined. The math doesn't work. There isn't enough Bitcoin to satisfy institutional demand at current prices. The ETF structure accelerates this dynamic because it eliminates the friction that previously kept institutions away. Before IBIT, buying Bitcoin required explaining to risk committees why you were dealing with crypto exchanges, many of which were unregulated and some of which had spectacular failures. Remember FTX? Remember all the smaller exchange hacks over the years? Those weren't just operational risks. They were career-ending reputational risks for institutional fund managers. ETFs eliminate that problem entirely. The Bitcoin is held by Coinbase, which is regulated and publicly traded. The ETF shares trade on NASDAQ, which institutional investors understand the pricing is transparent and tied to established Bitcoin indices. From a compliance perspective, buying IBIT looks exactly like buying any other ETF. The risk committee conversation changes from why are we dealing with crypto exchanges to why don't we have Bitcoin exposure when our peers do. That shift in framing is crucial. It transforms Bitcoin from an alternative investment that requires special justification to a mainstream asset class that requires justification for exclusion. Fidelity's research suggests that portfolios with even a 5% Bitcoin allocation historically showed improved risk-adjusted returns over the past decade. If that analysis holds up, excluding Bitcoin becomes a fiduciary risk. The momentum effects are already visible. Since IBIT launched, three major pension funds have publicly announced they're reviewing crypto allocations. Two insurance companies have filed regulatory notices about potential Bitcoin purchases. This isn't speculation. These are actual filings you can look up. But the bull case goes beyond just institutional adoption. The ETF structure also solves liquidity problems that have plagued Bitcoin markets. Direct Bitcoin trading is fragmented across dozens of exchanges with varying levels of liquidity and reliability. IBIT trades on NASDAQ with market makers providing continuous liquidity. For large institutional trades, the ETF structure is actually more liquid than underlying Bitcoin markets. The authorized participant mechanism creates another layer of stability. When IBIT shares trade at a premium to Bitcoin's net asset value, authorized participants can create new shares by depositing Bitcoin with Coinbase and selling those shares to capture the arbitrage. When shares trade at a discount, they can buy shares, redeem them for Bitcoin, and sell the Bitcoin to capture the spread. This mechanism keeps ETF prices closely aligned with underlying Bitcoin prices while providing additional trading volume and liquidity. Rachel Aguirre's comment about institutional interest in compliant and transparent Bitcoin access understates the pent-up demand. Surveys consistently show that institutional investors have been interested in crypto exposure for years, but couldn't navigate the operational and regulatory challenges. IBIT removes those barriers entirely. The network effects compound the initial advantage. As more institutions buy Bitcoin through ETFs, the asset class becomes more legitimate, which attracts more institutions, which drives more demand. It's a reinforcing cycle that could continue for years. Now let's examine the bear case with the same rigor, because the risks are real and potentially catastrophic. David Tawil from ProChain Capital warns that Bitcoin markets remain largely unregulated and that investors need to understand the risks involved. He's understating the problem. The regulatory framework for Bitcoin ETFs exists, but the regulatory framework for Bitcoin itself remains fragmented and evolving. The SEC can regulate IBIT as a securities product, but they can't regulate Bitcoin mining, Bitcoin exchanges outside their jurisdiction, or the underlying Bitcoin network. That creates systemic risks that don't exist with traditional ETFs. When you buy an S&P 500 ETF, you're buying exposure to 500 regulated public companies subject to reporting requirements and oversight. When you buy a Bitcoin ETF, you're buying exposure to a decentralized network governed by code and economic incentives. Goldman Sachs analyst Zach Pandel notes that Bitcoin markets are largely untested, and he's right to be cautious. Bitcoin has never experienced a prolonged bear market with significant institutional ownership. The asset class has historically been dominated by retail investors, early adopters, and crypto-native institutions. Their risk tolerance and time horizons are fundamentally different from pension funds and insurance companies. What happens when the first major pension fund holding Bitcoin ETFs faces a liquidity crisis and needs to sell? What happens when insurance companies need to meet claims after a natural disaster and their Bitcoin allocation is down 40%? Traditional portfolio theory assumes that diversifying assets have different risk characteristics and correlation patterns. Bitcoin's correlation with other risk assets has been increasing, not decreasing, as institutional ownership grows. The liquidity concerns are particularly acute. While IBIT provides liquidity for ETF shares, that liquidity ultimately depends on underlying Bitcoin market liquidity. Bitcoin trading is concentrated among a relatively small number of exchanges, and those exchanges have experienced significant outages during periods of high volatility. When crypto markets are stressed, liquidity disappears rapidly, the custody concentration risk is massive and underappreciated. Coinbase's custody division holds Bitcoin for IBIT and numerous other institutional clients. They're doing everything right from a security perspective, but they represent a single point of failure for a significant portion of institutionally held Bitcoin. A security breach, regulatory action, or operational failure at Coinbase could affect multiple Bitcoin ETFs simultaneously. The price discovery mechanism for Bitcoin ETFs also remains untested. During normal market conditions, arbitrage mechanisms keep ETF prices aligned with underlying asset values. But Bitcoin markets can experience extreme volatility and temporary liquidity crunches. During those periods, ETF prices might diverge significantly from underlying Bitcoin prices, creating additional risks for investors who think they're getting pure Bitcoin exposure. Here's the historical parallel that everyone's ignoring. The gold ETF experience from the early 2000s, when the first gold ETFs launched, they were hailed as revolutionary products that would democratize access to precious metals and create new sources of demand. Gold prices did rise significantly in the years following ETF launches, but the relationship between ETF flows and gold prices became increasingly complex over time. Gold ETFs eventually became vehicles for short-term trading rather than long-term investing. During the 2008 financial crisis, gold ETF flows became highly correlated with equity market volatility, undermining gold's traditional role as a portfolio diversifier. The ETF structure made gold more accessible, but also made gold investments more reactive to short-term market sentiment. Bitcoin ETFs risk following a similar path. The institutional accessibility that makes them attractive also makes them susceptible to momentum-driven trading. When markets are calm, ETFs attract steady inflows from institutional investors implementing strategic allocations. When markets become volatile, those same institutions can exit rapidly through ETF sales, amplifying price movements in underlying Bitcoin markets. The regulatory uncertainty extends beyond the United States, banned in others, and exists in regulatory gray areas in most places. U.S. Bitcoin ETFs provide exposure to a global asset that could face regulatory restrictions anywhere in the world. China has banned Bitcoin mining and trading multiple times. India has considered similar restrictions. European regulations are evolving rapidly. Any major regulatory change outside the United States could significantly impact Bitcoin prices and, by extension, Bitcoin ETF values. So what does this mean for different stakeholders, and what should you actually do with this information? For retail investors, the calculus is straightforward, but not simple. IBIT provides the easiest way to add Bitcoin exposure to traditional brokerage accounts. No need to deal with crypto exchanges, wallet security, or private key management. You can buy IBIT shares the same way you buy any other ETF, but that convenience comes with the expense ratio for IBIT is 25 basis points annually. That's reasonable for a specialized ETF, but it's 25 basis points more than you'd pay for direct Bitcoin ownership. Over time, those fees compound. More importantly, ETF ownership means you don't actually own Bitcoin. You own shares in a fund that owns Bitcoin. That distinction matters if you care about the philosophical aspects of cryptocurrency ownership, or if you're concerned about counterparty risks. For retail investors who already own Bitcoin directly, the rotation decision is more complex. Moving from direct ownership to ETF shares provides convenience and eliminates security risks, but it also means giving up control over your actual Bitcoin holdings. If you believe Bitcoin's value proposition includes resistance to traditional financial system failures, then converting to ETF shares partially undermines that thesis. Institutional investors face a different set of considerations. For pension funds, endowments, and insurance companies that have been waiting for compliant Bitcoin exposure, Bitcoin ETFs represent the solution they've been seeking. The operational simplicity, regulatory clarity, and liquidity advantages make ETFs clearly superior to direct Bitcoin ownership for most institutional use cases. But institutional investors need to think carefully about allocation sizing and implementation timing. Bitcoin remains a highly volatile asset with limited correlation benefits during stress periods. A 5% allocation might enhance long-term returns, but institutions need to be prepared for significant short-term losses and the potential for those losses to coincide with losses in other risk assets. The timing question is particularly acute. IBIT's rapid asset accumulation suggests that early institutional demand has been satisfied relatively quickly. Future inflows might be more gradual and price sensitive. Institutions implementing Bitcoin allocations today are buying after significant price appreciation driven by ETF launch excitement. That doesn't make the allocation wrong, but it affects expected returns. For the companies involved, the implications are enormous. BlackRock has positioned itself as the leader in crypto ETF markets, just as those markets are reaching institutional scale. That's worth billions in potential management fees over the coming decade, but it also ties BlackRock's reputation to Bitcoin's performance and regulatory acceptance. Coinbase benefits from custody fees and increase trading volumes, but they also inherit concentration risk as the primary custody provider for institutional Bitcoin holdings. Their operational excellence becomes crucial not just for their own business, but for the entire institutional crypto ecosystem. For regulators, Bitcoin ETFs represent both validation and challenge. By approving IBIT and similar products, the SEC has implicitly endorsed Bitcoin as a legitimate asset class worthy of regulatory protection. That creates precedent for additional crypto products and services. But it also means regulators need to monitor and potentially intervene in Bitcoin markets that extend far beyond their direct jurisdiction. The international regulatory implications are significant. U.S. Bitcoin ETF success will likely accelerate similar product approvals in other jurisdictions, creating global momentum for crypto integration into traditional finance. But it also increases the stakes for regulatory coordination and the potential consequences of regulatory divergence. For crypto-native investors and Bitcoin maximalists, the ETF development is profoundly ambiguous. Institutional adoption validates Bitcoin's investment thesis and creates new sources of demand. But it also represents the absorption of Bitcoin into the traditional financial system that Bitcoin was originally designed to disrupt. The philosophical tension is real. Bitcoin's value proposition included disintermediation of traditional financial institutions. Bitcoin ETFs reintroduce those intermediaries and create new dependencies on traditional financial infrastructure. That's not necessarily wrong, but it changes Bitcoin's risk and return characteristics in ways that aren't fully understood yet. Here's what you should actually do. If you're an institutional investor who has been waiting for compliant Bitcoin exposure, Bitcoin ETFs solve your operational and regulatory problems. But don't allocate more than you can afford to lose completely, and don't expect Bitcoin to provide diversification benefits during broad market stress. If you're a retail investor interested in Bitcoin exposure, ETFs provide convenience and eliminate operational risks. But understand that you're trading some philosophical purity and paying ongoing fees for that convenience. The decision should depend on your technical sophistication, risk tolerance, and beliefs about Bitcoin's long-term value proposition. If you already own Bitcoin directly, there's no urgent need to convert to ETF shares, unless you're concerned about security risks or want the convenience of traditional brokerage account holdings. The tax implications of conversion also matter, particularly if you're sitting on significant gains from early Bitcoin purchases. For traders, Bitcoin ETFs create new arbitrage opportunities and trading strategies. The relationship between ETF prices, underlying Bitcoin prices, and traditional market volatility creates complexity that sophisticated traders can exploit. But those same complexities create risks for unsophisticated investors who might not understand what they're actually buying. The most important insight is temporal. Bitcoin ETFs represent the institutionalization of cryptocurrency markets. That process creates tremendous opportunity and tremendous risk. The opportunity comes from massive new sources of demand and legitimacy. The risk comes from introducing traditional financial system fragilities to an asset class that was designed to be anti-fragile. We're in the early stages of this transition. The full implications won't be clear for years, but the direction is obvious. Crypto markets are becoming traditional markets. That's not necessarily good or bad, but it's irreversible. The question isn't whether this trend will continue. The question is how quickly it will accelerate and what second-order effects will emerge. The smart money is positioning for a world where Bitcoin is a standard portfolio component managed through traditional financial products. The contrarian bet is that institutionalization will fundamentally change Bitcoin's risk and return characteristics in ways that undermine its original value proposition. Both positions could be right simultaneously. What we know for certain is that BlackRock's billion-dollar Bitcoin bet has already changed cryptocurrency markets permanently. The ETF structure has been proven viable, institutional demand has been demonstrated, regulatory precedent has been established, the infrastructure for much larger capital flows is now in place. The question isn't whether more money will flow into Bitcoin through ETFs, it's whether that money will stay when markets become genuinely stressful for the first time since institutional ownership became significant. That test is coming. It always does, and when it arrives, we'll discover whether Bitcoin ETFs represent the maturation of cryptocurrency markets or their domestication by traditional finance. The most likely outcome is both. Bitcoin will become a standard institutional asset class managed through traditional financial products, subject to traditional financial system risks. In the process, it will lose some of the characteristics that made it attractive to early adopters while gaining characteristics that make it attractive to institutional investors. That trade-off will create winners and losers, but it won't create clarity about which outcome is preferable until the next major financial crisis tests all our assumptions simultaneously. BlackRock's Bitcoin ETF represents the financial establishment's successful capture of cryptocurrency markets. Whether that's evolution or co-optation depends on your perspective. What's not debatable is that it's already happened and there's no going back. That's Edge Capital Insights for today. I'm Sloan. Stay sharp, stay skeptical.